Hi, my name is Maureen. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is October 31st, 1994. My home group is the Monday night Claremont Women's Step Study and the Sunday night Old Town Speakers Meeting. I have a sponsor, Diana C., who's taken me through the 12 steps more than once. And I want to thank Damien for asking me to do a 10-minute talk tonight. And congratulations to the, or welcome to the newcomers. Congratulations to the token taker, or the hug taker, I should say, and to the birthdays. It's great to celebrate sobriety. And I'll try to tell you in a general way what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like now. And I grew up in a, right outside of Boston, Massachusetts, in a really good family, Irish Catholic family. My parents are still married today. I'm the oldest of six kids. You know, they taught us good values. There was pretty much no drinking in my house growing up. My dad got sober before my parents got married. And my mom took an oath when she was like 13, a pioneer oath, and she never drank. And, you know, there was bottles of whiskey, maybe two, throughout my entire childhood in the upper cabinet for when family, you know, people would come visit on Sundays. They might have a drink, or, you know, the occasional six-pack would be in the fridge for the Friday night card game. But, you know, it went untouched in between. And, you know, I can't really blame my alcoholism on anything that happened in my childhood. I do remember being a fearful kid, like really shy and self-conscious. But I took my very first drink when I slept over my friend's house at maybe 11 or 12 years old, and we took a glass of her mom's red wine. And I liked that. I went back for more. I remember climbing up on the counter and opening up the cabinet to go back for more that very first time. And we were pretty young then, and I remember we started smoking cigarettes after that, and then I started smoking pot, and I didn't even like it. I think I wanted to be cool and, you know, one of the tough kids, which I so was not. And anyway, I got caught doing that by my parents, got in really big trouble, and I just decided, you know what, I'm going to get it together, I'm going to shape up, I'm going to do good in school, you know, and I tried to do that. I just really didn't want to disappoint my parents again, and, you know, sometime after that, I got another group of friends who had older siblings, and, you know, there was drinking in their families, they had liquor cabinets, and it was on. You know, they liked to drink, too. And we drank every chance we got on weekends. I pretty much hid that from my parents. I stayed at people's houses, skipped school, whatever. Drank when they wouldn't find out about it. And I loved it from the very beginning. It was my answer. It was my solution to me because it made me feel at ease, you know, social, comfortable in my own skin, took away any of that, you know, fear that I used to have. And social awkwardness, and so I could never get enough of it from the very beginning. You know, the consequences when I was in high school were I threw up a lot. I occasionally wet my pants. I might kiss somebody else's boyfriend, and hopefully not in that order. But really, you know, I don't know what's going to happen when I take a drink because, you know, I lose the power of choice. Once I take a drink, you know, I'm going to have another drink. That's just going to happen, and it's going to continue. And I lose the power in choice in how I'm going to behave after I start drinking, too. And I learned after coming around these rooms for a while and trying that experiment, that failed experiment of the first drink, that, you know, I've also lost the power of choice in drinking before I start drinking. After I've stopped, I will drink again. You know, I'm strangely insane, like we just heard a long reading of in for More About Alcoholism. I have that peculiar mental twist that's that strange mental blank spot, the curious mental phenomenon. I have no mental defense against that first drink. And so anyway, my drinking continued to progress and get worse as I went on to college, and the consequences got worse. I had to withdraw from all my classes one semester in college because I was going to fail from everything. I, you know, had jobs I had where I had to be there by noon. I just couldn't even show up by noon. And when I did, you know, I wasn't showered. My hair reeked of cigarette smoke from the bars the night before, and I might have cleaned up the makeup on my face, but it was the same makeup from last night. And I probably reeked of booze, too, you know. And I was embarrassed of that slightly, but it's like, you know, what alcohol did for me, what booze did for me, you know, that was the price I had to pay for that, you know, what it was doing to me. And So, you know, I had some bad, you know, consequences, you know, increasingly worse consequences. I, you know, one day I was at a concert at my school and just fooling around, had this accident where I bounced on a couch and did a face plant on a concrete floor and, you know, smashed out my front teeth, was unconscious, and, you know, they took me to Tufts Medical Center, and, you know, then my parents had to come to the emergency room and see me like that. And, you know, I felt bad about that. I probably didn't drink for a little while, although I don't remember that. It didn't stop me from drinking for long. Fast forward to 1990, Memorial Day weekend. My mom's in Ireland visiting family, and my dad had a slip. You know, I'm 22. He's been sober my whole life. I had no idea what to do. But I did see the progression of this disease up front, you know, up close and personal, and how serious and deadly it is. And I had no idea what to do, but somebody told me to take my dad to a meeting. And so that's what I did. And I'm not sure what my dad actually heard that night. But he knew he was in the right place. He said to me, there's something about these rooms. And I could feel it too, that first night, my first night ever in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I actually identified with the speakers, and I just love the camaraderie and the joy and the twinkles in the eyes and the honesty and the humor. And I really loved AA from my very first meeting. And it also helped to know that my dad was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he was such a good man, you know. And so his example allowed me to have a good impression of Alcoholics Anonymous before I ever had to get here for myself. And anyway, I made a decision at that very first meeting I was ever at. My dad hasn't drank since that meeting either. But I made a decision that night I wasn't going to drink again. And it didn't occur to me that I wouldn't be able to not drink, to stay stop drinking, because I had never tried. I'd really been a daily drinker for a couple of years, and I was, you know, semi-functioning. I had some problems, but I was functioning. And so I stopped drinking, and, you know, I would go periods of time without drinking, but I would always drink again. You know, I started reading the Big Book, but I would still drink again, you know. And then I started going to meetings, like not ones my dad would be at, because I didn't want him to think I had a problem, you know. But, you know, I would read the book and go to meetings, and that helped. I would stay sober longer, but I would always drink again. And, you know, basically that went on for 4.5 years with different periods of sobriety. At points I stayed dry for a year, year and a half even once, but I always drank again. And, you know, half measures availed me just periods of dry time. But I ended up moving out to San Diego and eventually got desperate again and came back to meetings. And I met a woman who had also just moved to town. And we decided we would start going to meetings together. And, you know, I was really desperate at this time. We went to the speaker meeting at the AA convention in 95 together, and that's where I asked her to be my sponsor. And I'm so grateful for that lady. She's saved my life. And she took me through the 12 steps, and we went to meetings together, and she showed me by her example how to stay sober around here. And she went to meetings. She had a home group. She got commitments at her meetings. She reached her hand out to other folks at the meeting that she didn't know. And she took me through the 12 steps, and she didn't compare me to other folks around here. You know, she always compared me to me when I came in, like, and showed me my progress, not perfection. And, you know, she also didn't tell me what to do when I was going through problems, like when I had to get divorced. And you know, I've had some other problems in sobriety. My home burned down and you know, other things. We all go through things in life. And, you know, she never told me what to do specifically. She would always, like, send me to the source, you know, and she really encouraged me to develop a conscious contact with a higher power, and I'm so grateful for that. And she, when I got in here, she didn't tell me I had to be able to speak. If she did, I might have ran out of the rooms. And Foos might have scared me back in, but I don't know. Some of us don't get back in here. And so I'm grateful that I've been able to come to that on my own. Like my petty fears, some of my petty fears have been exceeded by my sense of personal responsibility that I learned in these rooms. And today I do have a life beyond my wildest dreams. I wouldn't trade it for anybody else's. I think I kind of explained it in saying how I had to come to believe that I was alcoholic. I had to do that by experimenting. I wouldn't have known. I had to try the first controlled drinking. I had to become convinced, like it says in How It Works, that I was alcoholic, that no human power could relieve me of my alcoholism, which is, you know, me. I was trying to do it on half measures and then see that God couldn't would if he were saw it. And I became convinced of that third one by watching all of you around here who were doing it. And I have 2 minutes left. Oh. Anyway, I've learned I need to really do all three sides of the triangle, the unity, service, and recovery in order to stay sober and happy, joyous, and free in these rooms. Like I was saying, today I have a life. I wouldn't trade it for anybody else's. You know, I'm able to be a good employee today, a good friend, a good mother. I have a daughter who's going to be 16 next month. She's never had to see me drunk. There's nothing I've been asked to do in AA that's been worse than my best day drinking. You know, it's like I'm so grateful for what I've been given here. It's a gift that I did not earn. I didn't deserve it. It was freely given to me, and the way I keep it is by trying to pass it on. And so thanks again, Damien, for asking me, and thank you all for listening.